Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joining us as always. Hello, sir.
Hello. Listen, I feel like I'm talking to celebrities, right? I mean, you and Carrie are the latest guests on Joe Riccio's podcast. I mean, how does that feel, Rich?
That was pretty cool. We had such fun doing that. Always love talking to Joe, but it was fun to just sit back and let him take the lead.
Cool. Well, I look forward to getting into that later. I saw he posted that earlier, and I have not had a lick of time today, but yeah, I look forward to seeing the tables turned on you both. That's good.
Yeah, it was fun.
Carrie say anything.
It's long because Carrie won't shut up.
That's funny, you know. No one seems to understand the man has the gift of gab, and he holds it in with such professional courtesy. It's unbelievable.
Carrie took the lead when it came to discussing food preparation.
Hey, you know, that's pretty ballsy when you talk to Joe Riccio, who's friends. I think they delight more in the preparation and danger thereof of food rather than actual serving of it. Well, cool. Well, hey, I'm glad to talk to everybody. I hope everybody's well. Everybody seems to be in sort of an odd mood these days. I hope everybody had a really nice weekend. We're here. We're changing into Italy this month in terms of our world tour. But before I get into that, I just got this really, really interesting thing that I kind of wanted to talk about and bring it up. It kind of baffles me, but basically, it's talking about how modern wine companies, you know, people creating not so much estates or, you know, places on a map to grow wine, but people who are starting companies, I guess we could call it wine lifestyle. This is a quote from Brian Smith, who is the CEO of Wink, W-I-N-C Wines, which launched the Wonderful Wine Company in May. Wonderful Wine Company is doing these, you know, as I said, sort of health lifestyle wine. So he said, people are very interested in origin stories, but the modern consumer is looking for, quote, how does this fit into my life, question mark. And I think that's interesting. I have always been told, and I believe it very firmly, that the story sells the wine, sells the, I mean, I grew up in boutique, clothing retail, haberdashery, etc. You know, clothing sells, rather the story sells the clothes, sells the, you know, the story is important. So I just found this interesting. Am I wrong? Does this?
No, that just strikes me. Never have I thought for a moment, how does this fit into my life? I like knowing and thinking about as I'm enjoying a wine, because I've learned it from you, enjoying imagining where it came from and, you know, how far back it goes into the history of this family and the region. And I have never even had a passing thought about how does this fit into my life, because it's all about me.
I sort of figured the answer to that was obvious. Like, how does this fit into my life? Well, it's a beverage that you consume probably before or with food, maybe when you wake up, depending on if you've had a bad day, or if, perhaps if you hadn't fallen asleep that night. But I never really figured it as, like, how does this fit into my life? Like when you're 42 years old with, you know, a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old that won't, you know, stop making noise in the background when daddy's on the radio, you know, maybe trying to fit in an exercise regime is like, how do I fit this into my life? But, like, really? Really? You're devoting your entire wine company to, you know, fitting wine into people's lives. Like, wine has fit into people's lives since time immemorial. Don't worry about that part. But do worry about, I worry about losing the story. For instance, I mention this because it's shared in a newsletter from one of the distributors whose wines we work heavily with, because they're real wine. And indeed, right below this is an advertisement, or whatever you want to call it, for this 70-year-old woman. It's an estate called Sanguinetto. And I was like, as soon as I saw that her wines were available, I ordered it. Not only because the wines are fabulous, but because her story is fabulous. And I can say to someone, listen, this is a wine made by a former country girl grown up in Italy in a place where no one really thinks they make good wine. She works day to, you know, dawn to dusk, 70 years old. There's a picture that I'm going to show because I'm going to put this out in my newsletter of her gnarled hands that look almost like gnarled vines. Like, that's what sells the wine, not like, well, you can fit this wine into your lifestyle at 5:30 to 6 p.m. And between your, I mean, I don't know. I despair for people sometimes. Anyway.
As well you should.
I should. So next week we'll talk probably a little bit about Dora Forsoni, who is the owner of Sanguinetto, but that is for our Sangiovese talk, right? But today we're going to talk about Piedmont, right? So we opened up with one of my favorite tracks from Jane's Addiction, Coming Down the Mountain, right? I chose that because I needed some sort of mountain thing. We could do Misty Mountain Hop, Mountain Song, any song by the band Mountain, but we did that one because I love it and it gets you cranking. Piedmont, which literally means basically foothills, the foothills of the mountains, basically you're coming down out of the Italian Alps, right? The Valdosta, Turin. And then you're getting into this area, which is basically lovely, lovely, impressive hills, right? Foothills, but aren't they glorious? And of course, the southwest facing hills and southeast facing hills are some of the most valuable in all the world, especially when you're talking about the little communes of Barolo, Barbaresco. But Piedmont is known for so many, many things. Of course, it is heavily influenced, as is everything, by that's sort of glib, by French winemaking. Last week we've been talking about Provence and places like that. And I'm sorry, not last week. Last week in my Wine of the Week video, rather, I talked about Provence, and Provence leads right into Piedmont, Italy, and the wines there are extraordinarily pretty and old world and French in nature, whereas when you get to other parts of Italy, and Italy, as we'll talk about, is very, very scattered in terms of their winemaking styles and grapes, etc. But the wines of Piedmont are undoubtedly probably some of the most elegant that the entire country produces. And since I mentioned Barolo Barbaresco, so the king grape of Piedmont is Nebbiolo. Nebbiolo is distinctively loved by Americans, and I don't understand why, because Nebbiolo at its most, you know, glorious is, yes, there's fruit, but there's also damp forest floor, there's wild herb, there's all sorts of, and the fruit is very muted, maybe it's dried fruit, dried apricot, things like that, not these overt, you know, robust reds that I feel like most Americans love. I'm happy that they tend to love these wines, but it's always been kind of curious to me. It's the sort of wine that you certainly would have. The other famous, of course, agricultural product from this area is truffles. So, and it has it, like, that's the sort of perfect pairing that regionality provides, right? You have and by the way, most Nebbiolos, unless it's like literally labeled Nebbiolo, sort of a young vine Nebbiolo, if you're drinking like a Barolo or a Barbaresco, or indeed some of the Nebbiolo expressions from farther north, Gattinara, for instance, they need some time to kind of chill out, or else they're kind of coarse and ugly. But when they're aged properly, again lightly shaved truffle, and some wonderful foods, it's absolutely gorgeous. Also, the other red that people probably know from Piedmont, of course, the Barbera grape, Barbera, Dolcetto. Perhaps people know Grignolino, but it's not as known here so much. But these are all also grown all around, very often in the vineyard sites that don't hold Nebbiolo, so they're often the lesser vineyard sites. But in certain places, there are, in certain cities, the other grapes sort of shine through a little bit more. For instance, the city of Asti, which most famously produces the frothy white wine Moscato, but in Asti, you do tend to see things like Barbera planted in slightly better soils because they don't do the Nebbiolo quite as much. But certainly, all these grapes are absolutely fun to drink. They all have their own little idiosyncrasies. Barbera is probably the one that's most familiar and comfortable to Americans because it does sort of have that overt fruitiness. But they're all absolutely worth exploring. Quick time check, sir?
No, we have just under a minute.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, then I must say we'll hit the rest of it later and perhaps next week. But thank you, everybody. Continued thanks for everybody being so cool about coming into the shop. So I will remind you, if you want to come into the shop, we are open from 10 to 6, Monday through Saturday. Please do wear a mask. We are still doing curbside, and as I said, continued thanks to everybody for being so agreeable. I'm so glad that we are not experiencing some of the nonsense that we're seeing online and news and stuff like that. Next week, as I said, we might touch a little bit on what I didn't hit on Piedmont and get into Tuscany, a real home of the Sangiovese grape, as well as Emilia Romagna and some of those areas. But until then, I hope you're all well, stay safe. And cheers to you both. Everybody, go listen to the Joe Riccio Food Coma podcast with these two. I guarantee you, I know all three of them, and I'm sure it's going to be an entertaining listen.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Have a good week.
Next week, eh?
You got it. Eric Meehan, Bagra Wine and Cheese Company, with Message in the Bottle.